Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Yesterday, Howard Feldman interviewed me on the Morning Mayhem about whether there's a sense of optimism sort of arising in South Africa as a result of the change in governance and bringing on board parties that have not held ministerial positions. And that generally, there's a sense that something's changing. The exchange rate has improved. There's a sense that maybe there's an interest in greater investment. And the new ministers, particularly the DA ministers, have been muscular in saying what they've identified as problems and what need to be done. And it doesn't take much to lift our mood. And I agreed with him, but I was very cautious. And I was cautious because I had read an article by our guest with which I'm afraid I agree, and that I think that whatever optimism we have must be tempered by a fair amount of cynicism and the realities of the fact that the ANC is still in power, effectively, and it is not, and even the negotiations over it, over the GNU, revealed it is not a trustworthy partner. It's just what you've got in the circumstances. Veteran journalist Paddy Clay, welcome back to Chai FM and the IR show.
Thank you, Sarah.
Paddy, I don't know if this is old ladies being grumpy, but I am inclined to, or maybe I'm just share a sort of natural cynicism that comes with age, but I'm inclined to agree with you that there is way too much up in the air and in our history under the ANC that suggests that any upturn in mood, we've got to watch the ANC carefully. And this perhaps has been no better illustrated than by Erem Otsoaledi's comments about, you know, collapsing the GNU if they can't agree to medical aids disappearing under the NHI. Despite earlier comments by our new Minister of Foreign Affairs, as I like to call it, the praise for the autocratic nasties in the Middle East has come to the fore again, despite indicating that maybe we should be looking to our economic interests in the West. And although the Deputy Minister of Finance very bravely said that, you know, what is this call for black unity? This is nonsense. It should be about everyone, but particularly in relation to class, because being the good communist that he is, that's where the revolution has to happen. Paddy, is any of this resonating with your general feelings of tentativeness about our inclinations to desperately want to be positive?
Well, I'm always inclined to be positive. I think I'm Miss Pollyanna when it comes to optimism, and I always struggle to see the bright side of life, but reality kind of impinges on that quite frequently. And having watched the ANC over decades now, as you have, we know there's often a two-faced nature there. And I think, you know, we've seen it with the Ramaphosa and Ramaphosa clique, and then the hardliners on the other side who are communist and very much racial identity as well. And that struggle continues all the time. So, you know, we're not dealing with one being. It is a being that continually morphs from one side to the other, and that plays very conveniently to it. And I think that thing too, Motsoaledi will be the tough guy. He will say there's nothing.
Sorry, Paddy, can I just interrupt you? We just had what sounded like an aeroplane flying overhead, but it might have been something different. Can I just take you back to the fact that, you know, we've seen this two-sided approach by the ANC over its history running the government. And if you can pick up from there, what the consequences are.
It's very convenient to have two faces and, you know, to play them differently.
Paddy, what I'm going to ask is, we're just going to take a break to try and get you back on the line, because you're fading in and out, and as I say, you feel like you sound like you're being captured by an aeroplane. Let us try and get back to you, and we'll pick up the discussion.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Paddy, are you back with us?
I hope I am.
Yes, you are. I think your plane has landed. You were talking about the sort of two-faced nature of the ANC, and on the one hand, you've got the sort of pro-GNU faction, and on the other hand, you've got the old-style ANC that enjoys its race nationalism and its basically command economy ideas of being the people who run everything in our lives, a la socialism, heading towards communism. This serves them. Does it serve us?
Pardon?
This may serve them, but it certainly doesn't serve us.
Well, it doesn't, especially if, you know, you have the National making friends with all the other parties in a GNU, and provincial levels and council levels just battling it out as if nothing changed at the election. And especially you're seeing that in Johannesburg, because Panyaza seems to be giving support to a more hardline ANC grouping that wants to hold on to, understandably, all the power it possibly can in 2026. It knows it's going to be a very telling election, because if it loses again on the metro level, well, it's on a hiding to nowhere. And so they are desperate, and they're pulling out all the stops at that level. So while Ramaphosa might be smiling and, you know, then occasionally stopping the more weird things that, for instance, Dada Moreira comes up with, there is definitely going to be a kind of, you know, fight to the death now for 2026.
Just on that point, I wondered whether, and I wouldn't be surprised if we're disappointed, but in a way, that schism offers, and particularly because he's in his second term, offers Cyril Ramaphosa the opportunity to have really made a mark on an influence in the metros, particularly the big, you know, Joburg, Pretoria, Kurileni, really made a mark on saying, you know, you got to go our way. This, you know, this, we can't have this sort of national versus provincial metro factionalism. And yet, he seems to be at risk of undermining everything, or we can only be sorely disappointed he can only be sorely disappointed, because it's not. We're talking about the big cities in this country, some of the biggest cities in this country, and they're in a terrible state, as you've written about, and we'll come to, and yet. You know, as you say, all politics is at the end of the day is local. So what we do or do not see here will affect an election in 2 years' time, and will affect a national election in 5 years' time. And I mean, we haven't even spoken about MK and EFF, but am I wrong in saying that, you know, the ANC's future hinges on whether it's seen to do anything even modest?
I fear that the inability of the middle class to do anything, to rise up, to go and burn down buildings, that's just what we are. We middle class ratepayers. We whinge on WhatsApp. Mm. We do all sorts of things, and we search around for new arrivals on the political scene, and we give them our faith and everything. But basically, we are not, it seems, going to find a way to stop this unless at the, you know, and at an election. And we might just give in to the ANC if everyone continues to be quite nice at the national level, and that, well, let's see, eventually it will happen. So maybe some people have got 15 years. I'm not sure if I have 15 years. So I'm getting a little grumpy about not seeing any change in my lifetime. Neither did my parents see any change in their lifetime. It's getting a bit much, especially as the middle class should be cosseted. They are the people who, if you charge them, will probably give you enough money that will also pay for the poor. So I don't know where they think the money for the poor is going to come from. If we suddenly do find some sort of, I don't know, chutzpah, and just organized boycotts of rates and our electricity and our water that keeps on going up, and we don't see anything in our, you know, suburbs that may not be sort of ANC, have ANC councillors, and therefore Dada Marera is not interested in. And so I think, you know, we are in a way some of our own worst enemies, those of us who are ratepayers and moan persistently, and we do need to tackle that by voting wisely in elections and by-elections. But I think they're almost playing, well, you know, they won't rise up yet. So they could push us quite far. I was just listening this morning, or watching, reading, what do you call it, on WhatsApp. The people complaining about the slew of parks across the road that are completely filled with rubbish because the pickers, and you don't want to get me started on the pickers because I think this was an abomination of a project. Whoever came up with it, I think they may have come up with it. It's an abomination that is not working out well. And there's rubbish strewn everywhere. But what happens? One can do nothing. There are people all living in the parks, and that's because there are no shelters for them. Nobody's actually trying to solve that particular problem also by creating real jobs, as opposed to Panyaza Lusufi strange things, or swelling the amount of people that the actual municipality employs, which they seem to do quite often, especially under Mashaba. They took everybody in-house, and that was supposedly helping the economic crisis. But, you know, we sit there and we moan about it, and it is a terrible sight in Johannesburg. It really is. But nobody's going to do anything about it. JMPD moves them on to Park 2, you know, so there's not much hope. Now, before, I never used to get my knickers in a knot, I suppose, when I was a young journalist, because I wasn't paying rates and taxes to the extent that I am paying now. And I'd like to see my money well spent for everybody.
Well, there seem to be two distinct phenomena at the moment. With Dada Marera, what worries me about his diagnosis of the problem, in other words, hey guys, I'm just going to service ANC areas, I'm going to get our base out, I'm going to make sure that we do better in the next election. That's really what he's saying. The problem is that it's almost an apartheid-style thinking, just in the fact that people's life experience doesn't revolve around the few square meters of house or shack that they live in. Their experience is being in town. Their experience is working in the suburbs. Their experience of what is wrong with Joburg goes way beyond just whether they are serviced sort of immediately in their voting area. That's the one thing. The other thing is, of course, that, you know, I suppose one has to admire his saying, well, you know, don't get your hopes up with me. I don't intend to change much. Look, we know that rescuing Joburg is going to be a mammoth task beyond imagination if it's capable of being done. But to sort of start your period in office where your position has been so aggressively fought for by your party by saying, well, you know, don't expect much because I'm not going to give you much. I mean, you kind of think, well, you know, why on earth are you there? But he's also the man who's saying, you know, we've almost got a plan for dealing with derelict buildings and people now dying again in fires in buildings that should be condemned. Has he? I mean, can one have, just watching him speak, have any sense that he has a plan? I mean, a plan would include demolishing a lot of buildings, providing alternative accommodation, which to some extent is the ANC being hoist by its own petard. And that is, if people move into areas that are either owned by the municipality or owned privately, and you have to provide alternative accommodation to get out of properties you have essentially no right to be in, you know, what can be done in Cape Town is not and probably cannot be done in Joburg, certainly not under an ANC administration. So that's on the one hand. On the other hand has been big business saying we will continue to assist government at national level dealing with issues like infrastructure, crime, and those things, and Eskom, and some progress seems to have been made. But perhaps the one moment that sort of stirs my heart is the opposition to signing that ridiculous National Health Insurance Compact, which basically said we commit to the NHI, particularly as it landed like a dead weight when Cyril Ramaphosa signed it into law just before the election. Didn't take into account the aspirations of people to be on medical aids for better treatment, and probably not having much faith that the NHI would improve their lot if they had to continue to rely entirely on a public service. So that sort of standing their ground, possibly a hill to die on the NHI, but Morera offers us nothing. The city of Joburg offers us nothing. Can we start to look to business to actually show some moxie?
Well, we've been waiting for that for some time, haven't we? I mean, I'm sure they are helping with certain things. Nobody really seems to trumpet this out too much. And certainly, Morero could take a couple of tips from the DA ministers in the GNU and be a little more communicative, as you say, about what do you do about these buildings? Maybe some of them are state buildings, and Dean McPherson can come and rescue us by looking after that little problem. But certainly he could be a little more clear about how exactly these things are going to be tackled, other than as they have always been tackled, which has been unsuccessfully.
Hmm.
Just operating in a better manner could win people over. I mean, the middle class might even give in and say, well, we're never going to, overthrow this lot, so let's vote ANC, and then we can put pressure on our councillor in the area, which, to my opinion, would be a very, very big mistake. But, that is a possibility they might be counting on, that in the end we just give up and say, okay, guys, we're with you all the way. On the NHI, I feel the same as you. As somebody who relies on wonderful chronic medication to be delivered to me every month by courier, I am particularly keen on it. I also belong to the medical aid that the whole of the parliament belongs to. And I can't see them giving up this very cushy medical aid. It doesn't have all the things like gyms and that kind of stuff and the discovery program, but it is a good medical aid, and it usually pays when you've got valid reasons. What are they talking about? I've watched people who have had chronic illnesses who have to go to public health, and I have seen how long they have to wait in queues, how suddenly dries up, they can't get that thing anymore, how terribly they are treated in the public hospitals. One of the very first programs I did for radio for the SABC was about how we treat people in public hospitals.
I'll raise something that might be a bit positive after we've paid the sponsors.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Sorry, before I look at the positive, something's come to mind that I just like your comment on about what sort of trust one has in the ANC. Everyone knows that the DA was schneiding in the negotiations with the ANC. I mean, we saw that two-facedness play out, but for circumstances, we may not have had the GNU as it currently organised. It's now become apparent that the split in the EFF has largely to do with the fact that Floyd Shivamba managed to negotiate 4 potential ministries, I think, and 6 deputy minister positions for the EFF until Julius Malema pulled the plug because he wasn't included in all of that, which suggests that they'd had some serious discussions, given the fact that the EFF came very, very late to the party. So this is the idea that, the ANC, perhaps the part of the ANC that thinks that growth might be actually a good thing, and getting things done might be a good thing eventuated, but it might have been a lot closer than it appears.
Yes, and just imagine how much more Schneid, as you said, would have been the DA should that have happened. Mm. And so good faith be damned. So it really is a problem. The big question, I think, that the elephant in the room is what would push the DA out the GNU?
Mm.
And would it be NHI?
Mm.
Yeah. Will it be, as I said in my piece, that there's no movement on race classification.
Mm.
The word racist is still bandied about with absolute abandon, with not a single fact attached to it or any proof that anyone was ever sort of racist to somebody, but simply from what their opinions are, they are deemed to be racist. Mm. So I notice that now with the complete hysteria over the the appointment of one Roman Kabanak as chief of staff in John Steenhuisen's office, as I have remarked on Twitter, well, at least we know he's not a cadre.
Yes, exactly.
So it sort of certainly set some sort of pigeons out in the fox nest. Mm. And yeah, I would be interested. What is going to push the DA out?
Mm.
Will it ever be pushed out, or can it slowly, inch by inch, bring about such a change in attitude about what government should be like and how our ministers should behave? And I think that's why they are clinging to it. It's the greatest showcase they've ever had because they are not listened to by the media, the mainstream media on the whole. Mm. Now they've had a lot of publicity because everybody wants to interview them, but it'll revert back to the hypercritical state.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's my general feeling.
Well, then let me go over to the sort of positive, and that surely has to lie in the private sector, both as individuals, as ratepayers, as businesses. I mean, there's really recently been an upgrade of the area around Gundy Square by private developers, and they really concentrated on two things above all: security, in other words, a visible security presence, and cleanliness, cleaning up the streets. And I think that those two things alone can make a huge amount of difference before you get into the really expensive, difficult stuff of renovating buildings, of sorting out streets, etc., etc., because people do respond to the environment they live in. If there's trash around, trash will be thrown. It's not rocket science. So surely the answer probably lies in a way for all elements of the private sector, the NGOs, the businesses, the residents, and a lot of whom have done some very impressive work, to really sort of up their game in the sense of not taking this nonsense, really being prepared to stand up. And I mean, the feasibility of a rates boycott is probably not on the table, but maybe anything's possible. We do have to be just more muscular, because we know what we need. This is where we live, wherever we live, township or suburb.
Yes, certainly. I mean, look at private security, how it does the job for everybody in the suburbs. And we all pay. The people in my suburb, black, white, Indian, we all pay for the security. The security picks up our dogs when they get lost. They find lost children. They protect our homes. They clean up the parks. They put fences up around the parks wherever they can. They are doing an awful lot to sort of maintain some sort of sense of hanging in there. And I really think if private business can pay for extensive security further than their places of business, extend that would also help, so you just create a bigger and bigger footprint that is a fairly safe area where an ordinary shopper can feel safe, where mum and kids can be for a while and sit down on a bench and not have their bags ripped away or the child ripped away. So That would certainly be something that they could do, and they don't have to be the multimillionaires who do it. I mean, multimillionaires seem to go for NGOs.
Yeah.
So let's see ordinary businesses just improve their area of influence,
yeah,
or the area around them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's the small thing. I mean, a good example, perhaps, just to end off with, is the fact that the organization within the parks, within Parkview, has taken hold of Zoo Lake, and really turning it into a place people want to come back to, and it's just I think it's partly just really saying, You don't trust the private sector, tough, and really find a way to politicize the fact that we can't sit back as individual and as ratepayers. Paddy, thank you very much for coming on. I suppose we could whinge until the cows come home, but we partly do it to get people to say, I'm translating my whinging into something else.
Yeah, no, whinging, and then we get to the positivity. We'll find solutions, unlike Mr. Marrero, who hasn't yet told us what he saw.
No, and don't hold your breath waiting. Thank you, Paddy Clare.
Okay, bye.